omegyanasimarandasya jnanam jana shavakaya chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha namo mahabhadanyaya krishna prema pradayate krishnaya krishna chaitanya namne gora sise namaha vancha kalpa tarubhyascha vipashindhu bayevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from Sri Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here for 2 more weeks. I'm going to have to change the presentation mode. Just 1 second here.
Okay.
Okay, I trust you all can still hear me. Yeah, I'll be here for 2 more weeks. Of course, feeling separation already from Vrindavan. It's such a place conducive to spiritual life. And I just wanted to mention before I begin today's discussion, my hearts go out to the people and devotees in Christchurch, New Zealand. I don't know if any of you heard that they had an earthquake, a very serious one. I have many, many friends there. In fact, Ariel and Haley, they'll be with me in August, and Ariel's mother, Karinika. So it's always difficult. You know, suffering is when the world goes against our desires and control. And because we're not the controllers of the world, there's a universal interest that goes beyond our own particular desires. We suffer unless we're actually linked up with the universal interest, and therefore we see God's will in the movement of the world. So it's always difficult when things don't go our way, but when they rapidly don't go our way, it's especially a challenge. That's called calamity. When the things that you've, at least in this life, have held as a fixed comforts or fixed attachments, we have so many worries of things that change, but at least there's some things, perhaps, you know, our family or our community, our temple, our place. So when that's threatened, it's really a challenge to go deeper into some spiritual understanding of something that actually is permanent and steady and always with you. And not subject to things beyond our control. I was in the Lower East Side during the World Trade Tower when that went down, and the change and the threat of a change in the way people's fixed world was, I was getting messages constantly how frightening that is and how I wouldn't call it inspirational, but how it forces people to seek something permanent, which is the soul and one's relationship with the divine, which is always there and can't be changed. So, I mean, they may even be listening on to this Sangha now. I'm kind of in transition in this class right now. It's just the nature of me leaving India. So what I'm going to do is I have a class regularly in the place that I stay, and at least for the next few weeks, I'm just going to summarize what I've been studying, which could kind of be nice because you'll get more of a story form, but I'm studying the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya, and he decides to go to Vrindavan. He's in Puri in Orissa, and he tried to go once before, and somehow he wasn't able to go. And of course, for any Vaishnava, and of course Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is incarnation, manifestation of Krishna, who's seeking to experience the mood of Srimati Radharani, his best devotee. Which is a very, very interesting concept in itself, that God to become complete in his pleasure, which is love and devotion, has to experience that pleasure from the perspective of the devotee. So it's God seeking the experience of the devotee. The devotee who can see and experience the beauty of God. The devotee who can feel that love for God. And the devotee who can experience the happiness of God's love for him or her. So to become complete, he has to take that position. And in that way, Chaitanya also represents the acharya, or the teacher, because he is seeking the same things we are. We want a heart filled with love, and not only filled with love, but filled with love to the highest extent. So he's seeking that, and those who are actually seeking that, they also seek Vrindavan, at least to visit Vrindavan, the place where that love is manifest to the highest degree. And people who come here, they can actually feel that. They can feel that movement, which is therefore sometimes a difficult place to stay if you stay for a long time. Because our tendency is to put ourselves in the center, and that doesn't work in a spiritual place. If we want to be in the center, then there's an energy against our will and desire. We want to put God in the center, then the energy and will is for our desire. It's like on a river, you know, there's wind. And, you know, is the wind helpful or not? It depends on what direction you're going in. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going to Vrindavan, and of course, he's a very prominent spiritual leader with thousands and thousands of followers. So he's in Puri, and he's in Puri with his very, very confidential associates, the people who really know his inner heart, and therefore can serve him. If you really want to serve someone, you have to know their desires. And one's inner desires is only revealed to one's confidant. So he reveals to his confidant that I want to go to Vrindavan, and I'm going to travel to Vrindavan, but I want to go alone. Now, his confidants are very concerned because, you know, they have love for him, and they want to see, even though he's a renunciate, and as a renunciate, he shuns excess comforts and luxuries. And in the life of Chaitanya, he even became upset sometimes when his disciples wanted to give him too comfortable a life, because he'd already renounced the world and wanted to perform austerity. Pato divyam yena kaputra sattvam shudye yasman brahmasokyam tanah. Austerity is divine if it's performed for a divine cause. So in the service of the divine, to give up those things that have no relationship to the divine, which in an advanced stage is practically most of the things we have. and also to become detached from the bodily concept of life, some austerity is required. Because when there's discomfort and simplicity on the in the bodily in one's life, and one has a spiritual objective, then one will take those simplicities to extract the consciousness from the body, which is very, very favorable for spiritual life, and is one of the goals of spiritual life, to become detached from the impulses of the mind and senses that draw us externally into the bodily concept of life, and draw us the consciousness outward from the resting of the soul. And at the same time, when one accepts too much luxury and pampering of the mind and senses, then one becomes increasingly absorbed in the bodily concept of life. And in the bhakti path, if you're too absorbed in the bodily concept of life, then you'll be self-centered. And self-centeredness and egotism in any path is off the mark for spirituality. And in the bhakti path, that's specifically the locus standi, the position where you cannot experience devotion. And you cannot fulfill the desire of the heart to express devotion to the highest degree, which is to rest in God and everything. So they're concerned. They understand that, but they think at least for his needs, especially to send someone who is pure that could cook. Because when one is really going deeply into a meditational process, one is very sensitive to the environment. And he tries to keep his environment in goodness, which will impact the mind in goodness. And the symptom of goodness is detachment and clarity, which is essential for meditation. So eating is practically the thing that affects our consciousness the most. Eating and intimate association with others. It's practically a thing that affects one the most. So the concern that he has to have someone who's clear-minded and peaceful to cook, because what one cooks, or the food one eats, or what the consciousness of the person who cooks remains in the food that he makes. Just by his mind, he's passionate, he makes things that are passionate, that are not good for health and spiritual life. And subtly, it goes into the food. And the so, as I said, at least accept a cook. At least accept, you know, a person that can serve you and maybe an assistant to hold your things. And Lord Chaitanya was very, very, because previously, when he was traveling, they gave him one assistant who was a disturbance to him. Because when you're the assistant or servant of someone, you have to live in their world. Generally, we have a world. We center ourselves in our desires, and we want the world to move according to our desires. If you're the servant and assistant of someone, then their desire becomes prominent, and the world is structured according to their needs and not yours. To actually be an assistant or servant of someone, one has to have affection. And he wanted someone who was a sadhu, who was not hypocritical, who was simple and pure in mind. And so he was reluctant. First of all, why didn't he want so many followers? Because he was going to a spiritual place. And going to a spiritual place means to go in the mood of service. And the mood of service is the humble position. And if you want to extract the beauty of Vrindavan, which is the spirit of love and devotion for Radha and Krishna, you have to go in the mood of service, seva bhava. Actually, our whole world should be situated in that consciousness, that we see the world in terms of the desire of God and others. We see it through that way. We want to see it through that way. It's our bhava. It's our mood. And that's a spiritual person. It's the exact opposite of bhoga bhava. I see everything according to my needs. I see everything. Of course, we have to fulfill our needs. But that's not the pervading consciousness. The pervading consciousness is service for others, service for God. So look, especially going to the Holy God. The mood of going on pilgrimage in general is Tere Vatani Haritoshanani. We make a vow, Haritoshani, only to please. Toshani. Toshi means only to please. To please God and to please others. We may not be able to do that in our ordinary life. We go on pilgrimage, yes. And he's going on pilgrimage. He wants to keep Haritoshanani. I will please God. I want to be in that consciousness. And because he's such a big spiritual figure, when he travels, then so many people will come. Last time there were thousands and thousands of following him, and he didn't go. He didn't want to enter the Dham, always being pressured to be in the center. Of course, a great spiritual personality, he can have many, many, many followers. But he still lives in the world of Guru and Krishna. And then there are followers, he just brings them into that world. He never puts himself in the center. But still, when there are so many students and disciples around, it's a pressure not to be in that mood. In fact, in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when it gives different principles of devotion, then it describes, in relationship to the temple. Well, what's the temple? The temple means that it's God-centered. You enter into the temple in that mood. And the consciousness is very much prominent in that way. So, it says, one should not go in a palanquin. Yeah, that's an easy one. Who's going to go in a palanquin? But when we used to have a Prabhupada's disappearance festival in the temple, and I was designated to invite senior Vaishnavas, I remember we invited this group of senior Vaishnavas, and I sent the bus to pick them up. But they had the bus parked down the street rather than in front of the temple. They didn't want to. They considered that a palanquin. They didn't want to go to the temple in prominence. Don't want to go to the holy place in prominence. He wanted to go alone. And he wanted to enter into that mood and enter into the Dham in terms of seva bhava. And saintly people, they're in that mood, especially in Vrindavan. I remember there's a great saint in Varsana, Ramesh Baba. I told that story once before, you may have heard it, that a friend of mine wanted Ramesh Baba lives on top of one hill, and a big temple was built on top of this hill. And he came to that place because, he was a very spiritually elevated person, and at a very young age, he just wanted to be alone. Just wanted to worship Radha and Krishna without any distraction. But he advanced, and so many people took shelter of him. I remember one time going to Barsana and taking a group of people, and we got stuck at the train thing. And somehow or other, that day there were like 7 or 8 trains. Usually you go in 10 minutes. We had to wait an hour, and we were late. And then we couldn't go the long way and visit the temple last, otherwise we would have missed four hills there. He didn't live on the main hill, but one of the hills is the Sri Ji Mandir, Radharani's temple. So we got there so late, we had to go to that temple first. And then about, we went counterclockwise. So we started with the thing we wanted to see last. We saw that first, and we worked our way down the hill. So we went to this Ramesh Baba, and people... some of the followers saw us there. We were doing kirtan in the temple. It was about 1 o'clock. They said, You want to meet Baba? He said, sure. And we went up. We had to go up further because his room is on the very, very top. And his follower brings us into the room, and he's sitting on the bed eating lunch. He's just taking some soup. So he looks at us. And I remember the first thing he said, is there any service for me? Is there any service? And he said, kirtan save. And he just did kirtan, brought in his people. But the mood of service, he was eating, right? But his desire just became sublimated. Of course, we have to fulfill our needs and to serve, but I just thought that, seva, if there any seva. So Lord Chaitanya said he goes. And then it describes his travels. And, you know, you go from Orissa, and then after you go from Orissa, you head to Jarakat. It's a place. It's kind of like a jungle type place. It's a jungle type place, and he goes through this Jarakan forest, and then there's descriptions, and this would be typical in any spiritual tradition. You know, the Saint Francis of Assisi, or any tradition has someone who's perfected ahimsa, someone who's perfected nonviolence. And in the yoga sutras, they have the Ashtanga yoga. It begins with yam and niyam. It's all about controlling the mind. Yoga is a psychosomatic. It's psychology. It deals with how one actually controls the mind progressively. And if you really see the penultimate stage of yoga, you have to get the mind until there's only one impression left in the mind, and that's an impression that subdues anything that seeks outward pleasure. They describe in the Yoga Sutras, it's just one... So it's a progression of detaching the mind. I mean, every stage is progressively what is asana. Asana is sukha and sthira, to make the body steady and happy. Why? So that it doesn't, the mind, the consciousness doesn't go to the body, because when the body is unhealthy, you sit up, and then you can't meditate, because the mind is just thinking of your sore shoulders. And then pranayama, it purifies the mind even further. You're even more detached, and the mind becomes further and further controlled from the body, and then controlled from its fluctuations. And then there's pratyahara, which militantly detaches oneself from the body. And then real meditation begins, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. And it's a progression of concentration. So it starts with yam and niyam. Yam means if you want to begin any process of progressive meditation, progressive spiritual discipline, one first has to control the mind in relationship to others. That's yam. then niyam is controlling the mind and relationship with oneself. So yam, and what's controlling? Well, the first thing, and it's progressive, is nonviolence. First, you have to be nonviolent. If you can control how you relate with others, if your mind is so uncontrolled that you subjugate forcibly others to your desires to the extent that you exploit their needs and comforts, then there's no question of yoga. There's no question of yoga. So ahimsa. And then, in the Yoga Sutras, Patanjali describes that if you can perfect a particular yama niyam, then there's a fruit of doing so. So the fruit of perfecting ahimsa is that in your presence there can be no aggression. And it describes, if someone actually perfects ahimsa, it says even the cobra and the mongoose cannot fight within your presence. And it's a psychology that it's a definite influence of the mind on the environment. And there's also reciprocation and mercy of God for performing some type of dharma or sacrifice. There's a universal system. So hayagya prajashrishtva prajapati anena pasavishyadvam yoshave swishtha kamadik. It's a Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, I've sent forth, you know, sacrifice. And by that, swishtha kamadik, your desires, you know, will be fulfilled. And there's a reciprocation. There's a cosmic reciprocation between following dharma and various principles and various sacrifices and austerities, and there's to encourage one, there's a benefit of doing so. To encourage one. So there's a benefit of becoming nonviolent. And it's a mystic benefit. And the mind is composed of, it's all composed of gunas, strands of matter that allow you to conduct various activities. Goodness allows you to conduct enlightenment, and whether it's in your mind or externally, it facilitates the conducting enlightenment. Passion, intense material activities, and ignorance, inertia. So when the mind is pure and perfects goodness, it has a certain mode or shape that affects the environment in nonviolence, affects the environment in the same way. So Lord Chaitanya goes through the Jarakhand forest, and when he goes through the Jarakhand forest, it describes, he's in the water, he splashes the elephants are dancing in ecstasy, then the tigers come and they're nonviolent, and he's going through the forest like this, it's not objective biography, it's written by a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. You know, so it's good. But at the same sense, there is in yoga, the really deep study of psychology of the mind works. There is some basis for this type of activity. That perfection of nonviolence, it has an effect. It's near Sherbourne, Massachusetts. I do one conference there every year, and stayed in a place called the Peace Sanctuary. And it was a person who really dedicated himself to nonviolence. I'm not making a value, but to the extreme. To the fact that when I stayed in the guest house, he was so nonviolent, he did not even have a guest master. He didn't want to be in the consciousness of defending. He never gets master. He felt that was even. I mean, it was to the extreme. But he did not want to. He had a sign: let your conscience be the guest master. Let your conscience be the guest master. And he just had a little box where you can write a check or put the money. And what the rates were, but I felt in that person's presence, he was so non-aggressive, and really to perfect ahimsa, you really have to become free from selfish desires. Because any time there's a selfish desire, it's going to manifest to some degree in some sense of exploitation. So there's a scientific basis for this. So Lord Chaitanya goes through the forest, and then. Because, his heart is filled with love for Krishna. Your desires color your heart, just like, you see the world through red glasses, everything looks red, or whatever it is. So rag, or attachment, or in this sense, attachment to Krishna, love or devotion, you start to see the world in that way. And therefore, when he's going through the forest of Jarakanda, and he sees, then what happens is the does, they begin to follow him. He just sees that. They naturally begin to follow him. Immediately, he begins to. One second, I got it. Yeah, the light went off. I need to get some. When he goes through the forest, this is the way. He sees that, and. He remembers Krishna. Because Lord Chaitanya, when he's going through the forest, he's chanting Sankirtan. He's chanting very loudly. And it's Madhuri. It's very sweet. And hearing this voice, then the she-deers began to follow him left and right. And immediately Lord Chaitanya, his mind goes to, because he's in the mood of a devotee, mind goes to Vrindavan and the scenes of Vrindavan of Krishna in Vrindavan, and he remembers the Venu Geet when Krishna is blowing his flute, and the flute amplifies the devotion in Krishna's heart for his devotees. So and the devotees hear it as Krishna's love for them. They hear it as Krishna's beauty. And the real beauty of a person is his heart. And in spiritual realm, the heart is on your sleeve. The heart is the form. A really pious person, their heart is their form. It's just like someone who's loving smile. Their smile is beautiful. It's not plastic, not artificial. Their smile is their heart. So like that way, the form is the form of the heart. It's like the smile is beautiful because the heart is beautiful. The form is beautiful because the heart is beautiful. And that heart, that form, that beauty is expressed through the flute. And then because the gopis, they have that intense selfless love for Krishna. Again, rock. It colors everything they see. They see in terms of that love, and they see that as an inspiration for love. So Lord Chaitanya, when he sees the goats following him, he says, Danya mamuta matayopi haranya eta yanandanandanam upata vichitya vesham. Blessed are those foolish deers. This is the Lord Chaitanya is chanting this verse that the gopis chanted on hearing the flute and they began to remember Krishna. Blessed are those foolish deers because they have approached the son of Maharaj Nanda, who is gorgeously dressed and is playing on his flute. Indeed, both the does and the bucks worship the Lord with looks of love and affection. And that's also described. What is Vrindavan? Vrindavan is the land of devotion. Devotion is the mood to please, and therefore devotion means to offer the best. So they have the vision of Vrindavan, that the peacocks spread their beautiful feathers because their beauty is what they have beauty. And the cuckoos sing, and the does, they have beautiful eyes, and they glance with affection. So Lord Chaitanya is passing through, and he's remembering that. And then when he sees that somehow or other, tigers are joining the does, and they're following, there's a group of spiritual environmentalists, they follow, they're called Bishnoi. Bishnoi, B-I-S-N-O-I. And they're in Rajasthan. They're even, you know, and it was about a saint that lived hundreds and hundreds of years ago, and he listed all these environmental principles. Of how to care for the land. And I had a friend, and that friend of mine, he went there to see these people. And sure enough, you know, when he went, he saw in the forest, he saw in the, because of how they dealt with the environment, he saw kind of, you know, kind of different animals together. Maybe not tigers and bears. So when Lord Chaitanya sees that, and he's in that bob, rock. His heart is just filled with this intense devotion and love for God. And he's perceiving it that way, and he's remembering the perfect manifestation of that love for God. And he remembers From the Bhagavatam, when Lord Brahma stole the cowherd boys and calves of Krishna, and then after a moment he returns to see what happened, but he saw that Krishna had manifest as Yogeshwar, the master of all mystic potencies, all the cowherd boys and animals. And then Brahma began to look at that scene of Krishna with all the cows. Some of you have gone with me to Prem Kishore's Goshala, and you see these incredibly beautiful in Vrindavan cows. I practically go there every other day or every few days. I take that walk in the forest of Vrindavan. And, just those cows. The cows are just so full. The cows are the embodiment of affection. Because motherly affection is called anugraha. It's a flavor of love. It's a kindness. It's a mercy. And the cows are the embodiment of that because they give milk. Not only give milk, but they are motherly. Usually when you're with animals, they're not peaceful. They're just so peaceful, the cows. So when Lord Chaitanya, he's Sri Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavato Mati. What is his mind? The mind is Sri Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavato. The mind is in the mood. Sri Krishna Bhakti Bhavato Mati. It's in the mind, Sri Krishna Bhakti Rasa, of full devotion and love in one's relationship with Krishna. So that's what his mind is. That's what his objective is. That's spiritual practice. I had a very nice, Vrindavan means meeting saints, really. So I have a very nice friend, Bhoi John Prabhu, and I spent spent 3 hours with him yesterday. I don't often, he's busy, I'm busy, but we made that time. And, we're talking about, what spiritual practice is. It's kind of like this. He gave a very nice, he said, first there's an objective or a goal. Then you have the next step. You have an objective or goal, where you want to go. You have an objective or goal, and then you have the next step. And then the following steps will be revealed. That's spiritual practice, spiritual life. You have an objective or goal, then you take a step, then the rest will be manifest. So, Lord Chaitanya, that's his objective, that's his goal, that's his heart. So when he sees the tigers and deers following him, he says, Yatra Nasanga Durvara Sahasan Nir Nagadaya Mitran Vajitavas Mitran Nivajitavasa Pritarut Tarshanadikam. Vrindavan is the transcendental abode of the Lord. There is no hunger, anger, or thirst. Though naturally inimical, both human beings and fierce animals live together there in transcendental knowledge. Anyway, it goes on and it shows the effect of elevated consciousness on the environment. And of course, that includes people. When one is advanced spiritually, if you're in the association of that person, even if you're not aware of who that person is, it will have a profound effect on one's consciousness. So that's actually the history of Lord Chaitanya. He's traveling now. He takes the renounced order at the age of 24, but decides to reside in Puri on his mother's request, that he's not too far, and it's 12 hours by train, but somehow it's not considered far. Anyway, it's a long story why, but he travels for 6 years. Pretty Vrajakacharya in the classical Vedic culture or the classical traditional Indian culture, when one gets old, then God gives signs that the body is temporary. And why should you invest in the temporary? You should invest in the eternal, which is the soul. We're spending so much time investing in the temporary. Now, when we are embodied and we have strong desires, then we have to work through those desires, even if we know ultimately we're spiritual and it's temporary. But the inspiration to become more detached is naturally there when you're older, because the body gives signs. I've just passed my 60th birthday, and I think I'm coming to grips with the fact that this body is temporary. You know, the knees, the hearing, losing the hair getting gray, stiffening of the body. So there was a formal system. And generally what would happen is, in the ideal paradigm at 50, the husband and the wife would start to go on pilgrimage and start to practice detachment. And then complete detachment. The man wanted to become completely detached. There's a little different ways for men and women to do that. But if the man wanted to become detached, he'd leave family completely. But initially it was very difficult, so he would go and live outside the village and his family would bring him food. And that would be called kudichuk. Then there would be a period of time they'd bring him food, then he would have to beg. And he'd live outside the village and he would beg, and that would be called bahudok. Then at a particular time when his detachment increased, he would just begin to wander. And in those days in India, it still is possible, but you could do that. And you'd wander in the forest, and when you're thirsty, there would be the stream. When you're hungry, there would be fruits on the trees or whatever. You'd collect roots or whatever it is. And in this way, one would begin to understand that the real maintainer is the divine. My whole life I thought that I was the maintainer, but actually I'm ultimately dependent on God, and he's still maintaining me. And that would invoke the kind of intimacy and devotion with the divine. And then at the highest stage of detachment, if you wanted to follow that type of path, one would just sit in one place and chant and be confident that God would feed him. It's called the Paramahamsa stage. And the 24 gurus of Dattatreya, he would see, you know, the loyalty of the dog, and, you know, so many things. He would see guru in 24 different manifestations. But the python, he learned dependence of God, because the way the python, it never searches its prey. The python just stays in a tree and waits until some animal takes shelter underneath. Then the python just falls down and swallows the animal whole. Even a hog or a pig can swallow whole, and then goes up on the tree. And then just digests and waits again. And it's fed. The ant gets its grains. The elephant gets its tons. The ant gets the grains of sugar. The elephant gets tons of foliage. The elephant needs so much. But God's maintaining and providing. So they have that realization. The Lord Chaitanya, he's kind of Parivajakacharya. He's moving through God's creation. And he's in that incredibly intense rag or mood of devotion, and everything is becoming affected and influenced. And then it describes how the people react to seeing him. Just seeing him, how their consciousness would be changed. Okay, I'm going to end now. Here in Vrindavan, it's 7:25. It means that soon a person who helps me come, and then I do my seva to my deity, the puja, the worship to the deity, and then I go to the temple. I try to get there by 9:15 for the kirtan. I mean, it's the kirtans have really been extraordinarily beautiful. Wow. And would anybody like to say hello? Because I do like to know that. First of all, I'd like to know that the hello?
Well, hey.
Who is this?
This is Bianca still.
Bianca, thank you very much. It's very good that you could come on this, and I'll be back in the States in 2 weeks. I'll probably give you a call and then probably come out that way sometime within a month.
Yes, that
okay.
would be wonderful. I didn't realize it was so soon, but it was great. I mean, thank you. I had a great conversation last week as well with
Rakhi Krishna.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We talked for about an hour, actually, so it was fun.
Oh, that's great, too. And not too far, there's another person on the Sangha who's a longtime student of mine. He's a professor in Bridgewater. That's not too far from you. We discussed that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And it would be good to
connect. Well, thank you for coming on. That's great.
Yes, okay. And I will come back on next Wednesday. Hopefully you'll be on.
On when you said next Wednesday again?
Next Wednesday.
Okay. Yeah, okay, thank you, Bianca. Great. It was great having you in Vrindavan. Wonderful.
Oh, I missed it.
Great.
Sure. Thank you. Good night.
You'll come again. Thank you.
I am. All right. Okay. Have a great night. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good night.
Okay. Good night. Anyone else like to say hello today?
Hi. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Brajaraj.
Hey, Brajaraj, Hare Krishna. Great.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, we'll see you in 2 weeks. And you got that to make those kind of crackers. Thank you. Okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Gail, Hare Krishna.
I actually had interesting. It was interesting hearing you today because.
Yeah.
Right. Immediately before I chimed in, I was thinking, oh, Maharaj is probably beginning to be in separation from Vrindavan. Because I know that the time is coming close, you know? And as soon as you came on, that's the first thing that you mentioned. And so it was like, wow. You know?
Gail, and you know how we're mystically connected. You knew that for many years.
but then, in the middle of, earlier today, you know, like early afternoon or something, late morning, I was repeating to myself the lecture that you normally give about how the modes of nature facilitate different types of activities. You know, and that was just today, and then here it was mirrored, for me in your class. You know, so it was like two in one day. So it was interesting.
Yeah, okay. Now, you know I'm going to be doing a program at Gokey Shores, right?
Well, of course, yes.
Okay. Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. You know.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Anybody else like to say hello? One more person say hello? Okay, I'll continue. Thank you.